Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Michael Wald, and thank you so much for joining me today. You are listening to Ask the Blood Detective, and today's show concept is cancer and disease controversies, what I call the 10 most misunderstood health problems of all time. Now, of course, you've all heard the term cancer, and you've probably heard of most, if not all, of the other conditions I'll be covering today. And let me name them real quickly. We're going to talk about fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, candida overgrowth, leaky gut syndrome, non-celiac gluten sensitivity, chronic Lyme disease, intestinal parasites, black mold illness, including a sick building syndrome and multiple chemical sensitivity syndrome, mast cell activation syndrome, abbreviated MCAS, and chronic inflammatory response syndrome, and that's abbreviated CIRS. Now, you may have not heard of some of these, but I can tell you that some of you out there have these conditions and do not know it. But let's go back to the title of today's show, because it is critical for you to get this distinction. It's called Cancer and Disease Controversies, the 10 Most Misunderstood Health Problems. What I mean by that is this. You may have a certain concept of what cancer is, or what fibromyalgia is, or what chronic Lyme disease or intestinal parasites or leaky gut syndrome is. But I'm here to tell you that each of those titles, each of those descriptive terms, have quite a bit in their background. And if a person like yourself is unaware of the subtleties of these diagnoses, then it commonly results, and very often results, I've certainly seen this in my 28 years of practice, many, many months to years, even decades of delayed treatment and therefore loss of quality of life, and in many cases, loss of length of life, early demise. So as we move forward right now, I'll be describing a few important things. Number one, what makes these conditions similar? Because they all do have something similar about them. And what makes them very, very different? And I'll describe the subtleties, this is important, of how each of these conditions and their subtle special qualities are treated in the medical profession, what is the standard of care as it's called, and how these conditions might be treated in the natural health field. And as we move forward, some of you will probably have questions. You can even message me, but email is probably the best. At the following email, this is how you can reach me directly. No one else answers my emails other than I. And the same thing with when you call me. I work with individuals one at a time. I am the only contact, and there are not other practitioners that get in the way of me getting the natural healthcare treatments right. So my email is info@blooddetective.com, info@blooddetective.com. Email me with your questions and comments regarding this and other shows at 914-552-1442. So let me start with cancer, because there's not a person out there, including myself, that is not at some risk of developing cancer at some point in our lifetimes. To begin with, cancer is a diagnosis, just like all of those other conditions I named a few moments ago. A diagnosis is merely a label. It is a term that is applied to an individual who seems to display some specific characteristics, some signs, some symptoms, you know, lab findings and physical signs and symptoms that fall into a category such that every healthcare provider who has the proper training would recognize as cancer. So for example, we have over 800 distinct cancers. So that's the first distinction. That's what I call the first blood detective distinction, that there is no cancer, there are cancers. And even if many of you out there are suffering from a particular form of cancer, your cancer is not the same as someone else that has the very same diagnosis. Because you have different genetics, you have different backgrounds, your body's immune systems and other homeostatic ways in which your body heals work very differently. So diagnoses and the diagnosis of cancer is really sort of a broad brushstroke category that you've been placed in if you have that diagnosis. And then, of course, we all know that we can be diagnosed with, let's say, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is one particular type of cancer, or breast cancer, or prostate cancer, or uterine cancer, or brain cancer. And then within those categories, individuals express their illness differently, and not everyone is treated the same, neither in traditional medicine or alternative or complementary or holistic or natural medicine, right? We all know this. Now, we may know this on the surface, but what I find in my practice, when people come to see me and they have a failure to reach a certain amount of success in their medical treatments or even their natural treatments, is they are not treated as individuals. There is a lot of lip service out there given by practitioners on both ends of the spectrum, the natural and the medical, of treating people like individuals, and they even have a term for it, personalized medicine. But there is no personalized medicine very often in traditional medicine. And I know this, again, because I've seen hundreds and hundreds, well, thousands of patients over the last 28 years. And if an individual is not treated as an individual, they simply cannot benefit from the potential of their therapy to save their lives. So, once again, a diagnosis is just a term. I am interested in what is in the background of the diagnosis. Okay, so you have breast cancer. So do thousands and thousands of women. Will they all respond the same to chemotherapy, radiation, or surgery, or natural treatments? No. Why would that be? Because they're not the same person. You know, this is quite, alarming on the one hand, but it's also quite hysterical in a way when you think about the fact that medicine is starting to get this idea that maybe they can personalize the dose of chemotherapy by experimenting with the cancer cells of a given patient in a petri dish in the laboratory with different types and amounts of chemotherapy. Their feeling is, their breakthrough thought is that, well, maybe we can find out the best combination and or doses and way of applying chemotherapy to a person before we give it to them. This is a novel concept in medicine. And for those of you who don't realize the joke in that, is that the concept of treating a person as with individualized needs is something that is sort of new in medicine. From a theoretical perspective, if you ask any physician, do you treat your patients as individuals? They'll probably say yes. But in practice, they don't. Certainly oncologists don't. There are certain protocols for certain cancers. And yes, they will change the dose of the chemotherapy or the radiation based upon a person's response to it. And if they cannot tolerate the medication, which is recommended, let's say, for that cancer, then that chemotherapy will be discontinued either altogether or for a period of time until the patient's labs become more normal. For example, the white blood cells start to come up again, the platelet levels start to come up again, the red blood cell levels start to come up again, and or the patient seems to tolerate a test dose. That's about as detailed as it gets. But chemotherapy does not treat the cause of cancer. No one would disagree with that. So chemotherapy is an ad hoc way of throwing something at a person with cancer in the hopes that it will kill more cancer cells. Follow me here. In the hopes that the chemotherapy or radiation will kill more cancer cells than it kills healthy cells. If the number of healthy cells killed exceeds the number of cancer cells, that person's mortality goes way up. Their chances of dying goes way up. I just had a patient yesterday who, with breast cancer, went to a major medical center in New York City and saw a dietitian. And the dietitian said, do not take vitamin C with these two chemotherapeutic medications you're on. So the patient, of course, was alarmed, and she called me up, and she said, this is what the dietitian told me. I don't understand. Why would they tell me this? I thought vitamin C was good for cancer. And I said, quite honestly, I said, you know, let's call her Dora. That wasn't her name, but I said, Dora, it is true that certain types of cancers and situations would not allow us to use vitamin C. Vitamin C might interfere with your choice of receiving your chemotherapy. So in that case, we don't want to use it. It is my job to look at your chemotherapy and to, based on research and experience and protocol, to decide whether or not your particular chemotherapy has an adverse effect with nutrition or a positive effect, specifically with vitamin C. So I knew that the two medications she was on, I'm not going to mention them here because I don't want people out there getting the wrong idea that this applies to them. It may not. So I sent her two scientific references on the use of vitamin C for reducing not just the side effects from these two particular types of cancer drugs, but also showing that the vitamin C improved its efficacy, improved its potential to kill the cancerous cells and protect the healthy cells. And then we spoke about those articles, and then she became quite educated and knew that the dietitian's recommendation was just based on that dietitian's limited knowledge in this area, which is sad because people's lives are at stake. If I looked at the medical literature again after this patient had told me what that dietitian said, and I determined that, oh, wow, I was wrong, and vitamin C should really not be given with these two forms of chemotherapy, I would have said to that patient, well, guess what? The recent literature seems to be very solid, and it's supporting the fact that, or the concept that you should not take these. But that's not what happened. So I have no problem admitting new knowledge. But I base my recommendations on many years of knowledge and updated information. However, whenever I deal with a patient with any diagnosis on any medication, and there's a serious health concern, I always look up drug interactions, both positive and negative, to check for the latest findings. But remember, folks, for every positive study you can find on any health problem and the use of nutrition, not just vitamin C, I can find you negative ones. So that might sound confusing. But what do you do? There are positive studies, there are negative studies. Simple. You have to find a practitioner that has the experience and training in making the proper clinical judgment here. Does the preponderance of medical and scientific evidence and literature support the use of the nutrient or nutrients in question more than the adverse studies? Then we need to say, okay, so we have this bunch of literature out there. Some say positive, some says negative. It seems to show positive. So let me now think of the person in front of me and how this might apply to them and make the final choice based on a personalized consideration of the patient's needs. So one last thing on this cancer business. Why would someone say, don't take vitamin C, that doesn't know what they're talking about? Well, that's the reason. They don't know what they're talking about. So the patient asked me, well, Dr. Wald, well, how is it that vitamin C can kill cancer cells and not kill healthy cells? Listen, that is a great question, I said to her. And I said, here's the answer. And we know why. It's very simple. Think in your mind of two plates in front of you on a table. And the one on the right is a healthy cell, and the one on the left is a cancerous cell. Now, the one on the right, the healthy cell, okay, write a letter C on that plate in your mind with a magic marker. C stands for catalase. Catalase is an enzyme that all normal cells have. It's in the normal plate on the table, right? The cancer cell, it doesn't have a C in it. It doesn't have catalase. Now, that table that those plates are sitting on, that's the blood. If you fill up that table with vitamin C, both of those cells are exposed to the same amount of vitamin C. But the cell with catalase is not destroyed by the vitamin C. but the cancer cell without the catalase is destroyed by the vitamin C. Catalase is a protective enzyme in healthy cells. So when large amounts of vitamin C impact that healthy cell, it's not affected. But when vitamin C impacts the cancer cell, it's killed off. Not every time. Vitamin C in nutrition is not going to kill every cell. Neither does chemotherapy or radiation. But the people that do the best, I think most physiologists and toxicologists and oncologists, for example, certainly I as a nutritionist would say that vitamin C is the way to go. One last thing about this. The practitioners, the oncologists or the dietitians that work with oncologists that are untrained or not well-trained will say, well, we don't want you to use antioxidants. Now we're talking about green tea and turmeric and resveratrol and all the phytonutrients. Those are chemicals and compounds in plants. We don't use any of that stuff, those antioxidants, because the chemotherapy works by killing cells by creating oxidation. So oxidation breaks down cancer cells. And oxidation sounds the opposite of antioxidation, antioxidant. Following me? Good. So why would someone take vitamin C or these other antioxidants, there are dozens and dozens that people use in cancer care, when they're getting oxidant chemotherapy? The reason is this. When these nutrients are taken into the body, let's use vitamin C as an example again, it is not an antioxidant when it gets into the blood. Its major form that it's carried in the blood, folks, is an oxidant. So that's as far as I'm going to go with this concept, but what I've gave you is some very advanced notions about how these nutrients work. Now, we've established that there are many types of cancers. People need to be treated individually. If people have cancer and they want to maximize nutrition, they need to see qualified people. So there are medical physicians, but if they're not trained in nutrition, and most only have 30 or so hours, that's just nothing. That's fewer, you know, commercials on, you know, healthy foods that you might watch in a month that physicians just don't have the training for. There are naturopaths, and some are quite qualified in the nutritional area. In my opinion, they have to know how to read laboratory work. And also there are dietitians. Dietitians can read the basics of some labs, but no more than that. That's not something dietitians do. I made it my business to become an expert in the nutritional interpretation of lab, which is why I'm nicknamed the blood detective. And I did write a book on laboratory and nutritional relationships. It's a 500-page text, and it's for healthcare providers to get this straight because this is very hard to do. So let's move to the next condition and realize that all these conditions have something in common. What is in common with them is they're just diagnoses. So what about fibromyalgia? What about it? What is it? So the basic definition of fibromyalgia for you to be diagnosed means that you have to have some muscle aches or pains for at least 3 months, and then you have to have these tender spots, sometimes called trigger points, but they're really tender spots, in about 11 of 18 different locations. And there cannot be another disease present that would have accounted for these findings. If there is not another disease and a person otherwise seems healthy, but they have these persistent problems, they're diagnosed as fibromyalgia. Now, of course, different books, different doctors have different definitions, slightly different definitions, maybe even very, very different definitions of all of these conditions, including fibromyalgia. But I think we get the point that there is a definition, there is a box that you will be fit into, and you have to have some common things alike with others, and it must meet the definitional requirements. However, one of the first books that I wrote many years ago was about fibromyalgia. And I realized way back then, when the diagnosis was not even accepted, that this condition is a joke. And here's what I mean by that. There was always a cause or causes of fibromyalgia or cancer or anything else. But someone can have tender points or trigger points and fatigue and achiness for 3 months or greater from many, many different problems. So I do not believe for a second that fibromyalgia is some kind of new condition. It's not. Fibromyalgia can be caused by Lyme disease, which can affect the nervous system, and inflammation, giving all the symptoms that fit the fibromyalgia definition. Fibromyalgia can be caused by thyroid disease. Hypothyroidism will cause many of the symptoms of fibromyalgia, if not all of them. Any sort of infections can. Heavy metal toxicity can. Autoimmune disease can. Cancer can. Now, there are some healthcare providers out there saying, uh-oh, you're wrong, Dr. Wald. By you giving diseases that can cause fibromyalgia, you're falling into the definition of what is known as secondary fibromyalgia, meaning a person has all the symptoms of fibromyalgia, but it is caused by another disease. They call that secondary. I get that from a definitional perspective. What I'm saying is I do not personally believe that fibromyalgia is some non-specific problem. It is always caused by one of several problems: triggered inflammation, triggered autoimmune or hypoimmunity, low immune problems. It can be triggered by any number of toxins. Just because the disease or dysfunction that caused the fibromyalgia may not be present at the time of diagnosis doesn't mean it won't show up in 2 months, 2 years, or 10 years. The bottom line is, when we're dealing with a truly personalized way of treating an individual through a healthy lifestyle, healthy diet, obviously, the correct amount and type and timing of exercise, and certainly the correct nutritional supplements, we need to know about their biochemistry and their needs. Where I am always treating the biochemistry of the patient, not merely the diagnosis, because the diagnosis is not real. It's just a term. So any number of problems can cause fibromyalgia, and they must be treated alike. Now, you know, everyone out there, that you can buy some encyclopedia of natural healing and you can look up fibromyalgia, you can look up candida overgrowth, you can look up leaky gut, you can look up chronic Lyme disease, intestinal parasites, and there will be a protocol right in there. And sadly, this is what a lot of people do, even the smartest of my patients sometimes, and then they wonder why it doesn't work. That's because those superficial recommendations are as untrue as the diagnosis is, as the name of a disease is. What I say as a blood detective is, you need what you need for your needs. So if you've got fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue, let's say, because you have mercury toxicity that's affected your thyroid, you can take all the iodine you want. It's not going to work. You can take as many capsules or pills of a supplement that is called thyroid kick butt as you want, but if you don't need those supplements in that bottle, they will not work. Almost everyone experiences some amount of placebo, by the way, which is the way that the body tries to heal itself, meaning a person will try something, it makes sense to them on a number of levels, and they feel better for a while, and that's very real, but it won't last. So when it doesn't last at least 36 or so days, beyond 36 or so days, then you know it was a placebo.